is my $300 million?
I'm going as soon as John is off the air. I'm putting tank. Putting a submarine up on Craigslist.
And then funding the horn and paying all our salaries.
Damn right. Enough of this BS.
He's in my extended network.
They got internet in Brazil, and I can buy it, and it's the same freaking time zone.
He likes to eat good food.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I guess it's a typical day throughout the world. The fifth year anniversary of Iraq, 4,000 American men and service women dead, hundreds of thousands of Iraqi civilians dead. We're shipping nuclear fuses to Taiwan instead of batteries. Oops. A portion of Antarctica the size of Connecticut, an ice shelf, is about to fall into the ocean. Well, you know, you lose one Connecticut, another Connecticut. Pretty soon, all the ice is gone. There's a huge uprising in Tibet. Our mortgage crisis is getting worse. And the nation's focused on the Obama-Clinton race. You know, when I think about Obama and Clinton these days, it's part of it is like two kids fighting. And part of it is, as I titled today's show, Mommy, Daddy, Stop Fighting. The differences between them are minuscule, at least on policy matters. But you wouldn't know it from the angry words that go on back and forth. Obama says Clinton exaggerates her role in creating the state children's health insurance program and the Family Medical Leave Act. Clinton says Obama exaggerates his role in immigration reform and housing policy and nuclear leak legislation. Back and forth. Are they both exaggerating? Of course they're both exaggerating. That's what they do. Look, they're senators. They can't do that much on their own. It takes a group of people to do things, and so they take a bit more credit than they should. But meanwhile, as the tone gets angrier and angrier, as Hillary Clinton's, dare I say, lie, let's just say misstatement about being under sniper fire in Bosnia, her misspeaking, as that comes to the press's attention, along with still discussions of Jeremiah Wright and Obama, I just want it all to end. I want it all to end. Stop fighting. We need a nominee. And the Democrats are raising millions and millions of dollars and spending it all on fighting Clinton versus Obama. Now, those of you that have listened to me know that I had a hard time deciding between these two. I did endorse Obama. It was a tough choice. Now I think I'm even more in Obama's camp. Look, both campaigns I wish would tone it down, but at the end of the day, I think Hillary Clinton has gone a bit too far. And you could argue I'm just saying that because I'm an Obama supporter, but I'm not. I think that particularly when Hillary was saying things that McCain was better than Obama in terms of being commander-in-chief and things like that, that's just outside the line. You don't do that. One thing I have noticed, though, is that in all the discussions of all the things that are messing up the Democratic Party, most notably Michigan and Florida, which we'll get to, it seems to me that Obama and Clinton supporters are so hilariously see-through, they're so transparent, it just makes me laugh. Do people not realize their obvious bias? I mean, maybe because I'm so close to the center of the two, maybe because I'd be happy with Hillary Clinton as president. I prefer Obama, but if she wins, I'm fine. I'm worried about the consequences if she wins. I'm worried about what it might do to our party, and we'll get to that. But, you know, if she's our president, I'm fine with that. I'm down with that. Still, because I'm in the middle, I guess, I see the bias on both sides. For example, Obama supporters are always talking about, well, the superdelegates have to go with the pledged delegate leaders. They've got to. Whoever's leading in the pledged delegates, that's the right way. And as no side's going to get to 2025, well, you know, the superdelegates have to do the right thing and vote with the pledged delegates. No, they don't. They don't. They have the right to vote for whoever they want to. Maybe they should vote for the pledged delegates. But if they don't, well, that's their choice. That's the way the system works. That's the way the rules make it. I actually think the better number for them, the superdelegates to look at, would be the popular vote. We have this crazy, crazy system for choosing delegates in the Democratic Party. I mean, a ridiculous system. And I'm not necessarily talking about the proportional system, though I do think that needs to be changed somewhat. There's a reason why John McCain is the Republican nominee really pretty much ever since Super Tuesday, because they have winner-take-all. Now, I'm not suggesting winner-take-all. John McCain was getting 36-37% in a field split by Romney and Huckabee, so that's how he won the nomination. But still, our proportional system is just crazy. It's different. Usually, it's each congressional district is done proportionally, and then the state is done proportionally. And the really crazy thing is that in districts with even numbers of delegates, it's completely different from districts with odd number of delegates. Our system of choosing delegates is completely arbitrary. If you are competing in a district where there are four delegates, you've got to get 62.5% of the vote to win 3-1. Otherwise, it's a tie. That's right. Anywhere from 37% to 62%. Pretty big difference is a tie. Whereas, if you're in a district with an odd number of delegates, 50.1% is enough to give you an extra delegate. 49.9% isn't enough. Now, either all districts should have odd numbers, or we've just got a crazy, crazy system that needs to be fixed. Not to mention Michigan and Florida. Whatever you think about what should be done, it can't be right to exclude those states. I'm not talking about excluding the count that Hillary Clinton won months ago where, you know, the parties didn't campaign much in Florida. They both did a little. Where Barack Obama wasn't on the ballot at all in Michigan. I'm not talking about counting that count per se. But I'm saying you have to count them. You can't elect a president based on 48 states, the District of Columbia, Guam, and Puerto Rico, excluding Michigan and Florida. Now, that doesn't mean I'm sympathetic to the Michigan and Florida legislatures for violating Democratic committee rules. I mean, Florida did it on purpose. They're a Republican governor, a Republican legislature. They're the most gerrymandered state in the United States. Here is a purple state that's almost evenly red and blue that has three-quarters of their members in Congress Republican because they do things like lump all blacks together in one district. And whatever you think about affirmative action, that kind of segregation really isn't good for our country. Alcee Hastings, the impeached judge who is a congressman from Florida, his district consists of grabbing an urban African-American district, and then it goes out into the ocean for 200 miles. Comes back in on a sliver, grabs another urban African-American district, goes back out into the ocean. To visit his district, I guess you have to do a lot of cruising up and down the eastern Florida coast. The point is that Florida is a Republican state controlled by Republicans. They put their finger in the eye of the Democrats, and the Saturday before Super Tuesday, 3 days before it was legal, they scheduled a primary purposely to mess the Democrats up. And the sad thing is, it's succeeding. Michigan, I got less sympathy for Michigan. I mean, Michigan, it was the Democrats. Well, okay, one of their houses is controlled by the Republicans, and one's controlled by the Democrats. The governor, who used to be a rising star in the Democratic Party, Jennifer Granholm, is a Democrat. But boy, did they mess this up. I mean, here you had both sides playing chicken, thinking that the cars wouldn't crash. The local Democratic parties, they said, no, why should Iowa and New Hampshire always be first? We want to be first. And they have a point. I've said all along, I hate the way we choose our primary candidates. They have a point. I would revise the system. But their point of, we'll just jump ahead of everybody else, well, as my mother used to say, if your best friend were running off a cliff, would you do so too? Michigan and Florida ran off a cliff. But that's not the fault of the people of Michigan and Florida. It's the fault of the politicians, the state politicians. And now the Obama supporters that say, oh, it's breaking the rules. Don't give them a voice. It's breaking the rules. I think they're missing the point. It's one thing to have the superdelegates vote one way or the other. I think they should vote as the popular vote goes. I'll get to that in a minute. But to say that the people of Michigan and Florida have no voice, well, that doesn't make any sense. Which is why I do believe in the popular vote. Even if you have to count Florida's, because neither side campaigned much, count the popular vote there. Michigan's a much tougher issue because Obama wasn't on the ballot. I'd like to see redos of both Michigan and Florida, but if you have to, just throw all the uncommitted into Obama's camp. Let's look at the popular vote. I believe in the popular vote. Democrats used to believe in the popular vote, particularly when Al Gore won the popular vote so dramatically in 2000. He won the electoral vote too, but because of shenanigans in Florida and because of the United States Supreme Court's coup d'etat, of course, we are in the mess we're in today. But the point is, there's nothing wrong with respecting the popular vote, and that gives Hillary Clinton the chance to fight on, and that's fine. But if she loses the popular vote, she needs to concede and support Obama. Look, the race can continue. That's democracy. That's fine. But let's slow down these attacks. Let's just lessen the level a little bit. The reason why the attacks are so nasty, ironically, is because the candidates are so close. But I want to hear from you this hour. This is the kind of issue that I think all of you have opinions about. Do you think that the Obama-Clinton race is hurting the Democrats? Is it hurting our party? What have you heard from your friends? I'm sad to report that I have friends who will tell me, if I can't vote for Obama, then I'm just going to stay home. Or I'm going to consider McCain if Clinton wins. I have friends who have told me flat out, I will vote for John McCain if Hillary Clinton wins. And yes, I've had friends that have told me flat out that they will vote for John McCain if Barack Obama wins. Talk about not seeing your nose, the end of your face. Yes, a good friend of mine, a very, very good friend of mine, I won't say her name because it's not about her, but she's a strong feminist. She's a strong supporter of Hillary Clinton. She wastes no time attacking Barack Obama every chance she can. And I don't think it's because she dislikes Barack Obama. She just likes Hillary better. And that's okay. That's okay. But please, please recognize how close these candidates are. I'll tell you, there's a bunch of emails going back and forth in the Jewish community. Maybe you've seen some of these. Constantly talking about Barack Obama in Israel. It's amazing what I've done, I think. I've done more research on Barack Obama and Israel than probably any person. I now have this standard email featuring about 23 links that I send out whenever I get, yes, another email challenging Barack Obama on Israel. Look, whatever your views are, Barack Obama is a strong supporter of Israel. He's no different from any Democrat in that regard. Yes, his preacher is virulently anti-Israel. Jeremiah Wright says lots of things that Barack Obama doesn't agree with, but Barack Obama has very clearly and strongly supported the state of Israel, despite his preacher. In fact, one of the things that I most appreciated in his speech on race was the thing that had nothing to do with race, where he said that his preacher was blaming... Oh, I'll get the words for you, because I want to get them accurately. But basically blaming Israel instead of radical Muslims. But I'm going to get the exact quote for you, because it's an important one. And I'll read it to you after the break. But in the break, I want to hear from you. Call in. Let me know. What do you think about Democrats fighting each other tooth and nail over Obama and Clinton? Do you think it's tearing our party apart? I mean, maybe it's helping us. We're getting more registrations than ever before. We're getting candidates going to each and every state, except Michigan and Florida. Maybe it'll actually help us in the end. Some are talking about a superdelegate convention to happen in June, before August, so we can finally resolve this thing. How do you think this will end? How do you think it harms your candidates? And what are you hearing among your friends? Are you also hearing what I'm hearing? People who are so petulant that if they don't get their nominee, they're actually considering staying home or voting for McCain? Let me know. I'm curious to hear from you. 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
Janine Marks, a 12-year-old, was fairly normal. She spent a lot of time online. One day, she met a new friend. The new friend had the same problems at home. They liked the same bands. They worried about the same subjects in school. They promised to keep each other's secrets. They wished they went to the same junior high. The new friend had good news. He said he was going to be in Janine's area one Saturday. He thought it would be amazing if they could just hang out, go to the mall. Janine agreed. The new friend didn't want parents messing this up. Janine showed up alone. So did her new friend, who wasn't in junior high, wasn't nice, and wasn't a 14-year-old boy. Last year, one in five children was sexually solicited online. Help delete online predators. Call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com to learn how to protect your kids' online life. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Dick Cheney has sunk to new lows, even for him, showing the utmost disdain for democracy, which is his distinguishing characteristic. Cheney last week dismissed polls showing two-thirds of Americans rejecting the Iraq War. His one-word response, so? When Martha Raddatz of ABC News asked him a few days later about this response, he said, with regal haughtiness, "If I wanted to be loved, I'd be a TV correspondent." What a jerk. But it didn't end there. When Raddatz asked him about the 4,000 dead Americans, he gave another appalling answer. First, he said, "The president carries the biggest burden," implying that the burden on the loved ones themselves is somehow lighter than Bush's, which I really doubt. And then he stressed that the soldiers volunteered to be in harm's way anyhow. To her credit, Raddatz followed up. When you talk about an all-volunteer force, do you think when they volunteered they had any idea there'd be so many deployments or stop-loss? Cheney's response? They signed up after 9/11 to defend the nation, and they're committed to the cause. Looking for empathy from Cheney is like searching for remorse from O.J. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop and a show I'm calling Mommy, Daddy, Stop Fighting. Are Clinton and Obama tearing the Democratic Party apart? I'm worried about it. I really am. I'm worried about the emotions. And part of it may be all the historic stuff that everyone talks about. First African-American. Of course, he's half white, folks. First half Kenyan-American president. First woman president. And so sometimes you get identity politics, yes. Sometimes you get African-Americans and women who are seeing, I guess, only that. But I've met all kinds, right? I've met African-Americans for Clinton. I've met women for Obama. And how weird to have white men be the demographic that everyone's fighting over. But in essence, when you look at their positions on the issues, they're not that different. I know I've said this again and again, but they're not that different on how they would handle the mortgage crisis. Their differences on education. Whatever their views on how the Iraq War began, they both, I think, would bring it home as quickly as possible. And so the media has to focus on the inanities, on the small stuff, on whether or not Hillary Clinton really was under sniper fire in Bosnia. She wasn't. She misspoke. She apologized. She was wrong to have said it. Okay. Or whether or not Obama has sufficiently distanced himself from Jeremiah Wright. Meanwhile, the media is not focusing on either John McCain or our current president. One thing about our current president, did you catch what he said last week when he was visiting soldiers in Afghanistan. Did you catch that? I mean, he was a video conference. He wasn't actually there, of course. But he was talking with people in the military, and he said, quote, "I must say I'm a little envious. If I were slightly younger and not employed here, I think it would be a fantastic experience to be on the front lines of helping this young democracy succeed." I can't really do a Bush. But, I'm not even going to try. I started to try. "It must be exciting for you," Bush said. "In some ways, romantic. In some ways, you know, confronting danger. You're really making history, and thanks." Aw. Bush wants to be in Afghanistan. Guess even he doesn't want to be in Iraq. He wants to be a soldier. Wonder why he works so hard to avoid service in Vietnam, getting into the champagne unit of the National Guard, and then not even showing up for that when he got hooked on cocaine. No, but he wants to be in Afghanistan. Yeah, right. Do you think any of those soldiers believed it? It's so romantic. A war is so romantic. War's fun, you know? It's war. You get to kill people. You get to see a lot of blood. You get to hold dying children in your arms. You get to see your best friend's limbs blown off. War is just so romantic. It's like a summer's day. Bush just wishes he could be there. If he didn't have this other job, this little president thing, he'd be there. He'd be right there. Kind of reminds me of Mitt Romney's sons. Remember Mitt Romney? Was asked why his five healthy, strapping young men sons in their 20s and 30s, who seemed perfectly physically and mentally capable of joining our military, why they weren't in Iraq fighting the war that Mitt Romney believed in so much. And he said, well, they're doing something more important. They're fighting to get Mitt Romney elected president. That's of most vital concern to the nation, and, you know, Iraq is second. Okay, all right, Mitt. Let's assume you're right. Electing Mitt Romney, that's the most important thing to the country. Well, then where are his sons? Romney's no longer in the race. How come they haven't joined up to fight? Let me go to the phones. I have Lottie RJ. Welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi, Mark. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
You asked for comments on this coming election.
Yeah, what do you think about the battle? Is it hurting the Democrats?
Is it hurting? Yes, I think so. I think it's hurting them a lot. I think, first of all, this election is about 18 months too long to begin with. I mean, they dragged it out and dragged it out. People don't want to hear it anymore.
Well, it got too early. It got too early because everybody was playing leapfrog over each other.
Well, yeah. That's
I mean, we never had an election January 3rd of election year before. That's ridiculous. Iowa caucus.
We've never had an election that's gone 2 years. I mean, usually they're about a year long. And they've made it suffer for 2 years of this.
And, you know, things can change then. It's true.
I mean?
Things can change.
Bad connection.
Yeah. No, I remember 4 years ago I was saying that when the Democrats chose John Kerry, they were happy in February and already disappointed by September. I
know. Well, the thing is with this election, first of all, I don't think we got to choose anybody. I mean, the media chose him for us. So, I mean...
The media definitely chose McCain and Obama. I'll grant you that. Even as an Obama supporter, I can tell you that Obama, until the incident with Pastor Wright, which I said would come up, was always... He was Teflon. He couldn't be attacked. The media loved him, and they loved John McCain. Oh, boy, did they love John McCain.
But the thing is, they're attacking him over something so silly. You know what I mean? I mean, what they've gone after is really nothing in the scheme of things. They had to really dig for it, turn over rocks. I mean, I look at what Hillary's doing. I mean, yeah, she's fighting a battle to get on top, and Obama's fighting his battle to get on top. I mean, I expect that in an election. I mean, I don't expect them to use the same dirty politics that the Republicans use. But I'd love to see them use their own tactics against the Republicans. But they're not. They're using it against each other. I mean, there's a number of things. I mean, I've got Republican friends that in this election, they don't know who to vote for, and they don't even want to vote for McCain.
One of the reasons, I'll tell you, why I supported Obama, and, you know, like I said, I'd be very happy with Hillary Clinton. I'm not going to attack her personally. I don't do that. I think, you know, because I agree with her policies. So, you know, why? I'm not going to attack her strongly. I might disagree with something or the other. But one of the things that reasons I liked Obama is because he was drawing Republicans and independents more than Hillary Clinton was. And I thought he was more electable. And now I see, and I have to admit, I predicted this, but I knew they would use Jeremiah Wright. I knew that would be the albatross around Obama's neck. Radical black preacher. Just enough to, if you can't convince everyone Obama's a Muslim, convince him he's a radical black Christian, you know, activist.
You know something?
And that's what they're doing.
I actually kind of admire that about Obama. Because of the fact that having a radical activist preacher as a friend, I think says something about him. It says that he's on the cutting edge, that he's got a little bit of spunk and fight, and that I think that's good. I mean,
well, that's good for us. That's good for liberals. I think it still scares a lot of middle America, frankly.
Well, you know something, I might be getting cynical on this, but you know, maybe it's time that we need another Republican in office. That will guarantee that there won't be another Republican elected until at least the next century. Because this, I mean, the economy's falling apart. Everything's falling apart. I mean, why put a Democrat in there to save it all, and then the Republicans are only going to come back and tear them apart?
Whereas, the worst part is that, you know, I hear what you're saying. Go ahead.
Okay, what I was going to say is put another Republican in there. Let them take the heat for what's been done. And then that way there, people will know. I mean, I don't think the American public is hurting bad enough yet. I think they got to hurt just a little bit more before they realize what's been done. You know, I mean, there's a never-ending war going on. I mean, it's getting bad. And it's really, it's going to fall apart. And I'd rather see it fall apart under a Republican than under a Democrat, since they caused it.
I got to tell you, that's the kind of things that Ralph Nader would say. You know, let the whole thing fall apart.
I hate to say it for a number of reasons. And one of them is the Supreme Court.
Well, that's right? The main thing, right? I mean, that can last for 25 years. I wish we had that luxury. I mean, I know what you mean. It's here we have the Republicans that have spent hundreds of millions of dollars. It's become hundreds of billions of dollars that we don't have. A war in Iraq that's going to eventually cost us $3 trillion that we don't have. And the economy's falling apart, yes, because you can't go into that kind of major debt without ruining the economy. Inflation's going up, unemployment's going up, the dollar's going down, and you're right. It'll take a Democrat to undo it, and to do that, there may be some harder times in America, and they may blame the Democrats, because the way these things work is they do take 4 years or so to work their way through the system. I mean, you look at Lyndon Johnson in Vietnam, all the money we spent in Vietnam, most of it was in the 60s, and we hurt in the 70s because of it. That's just the way economics works. So I hear where you're coming from.
What's in that? I mean, the fact that the Democrat's going to come in, what's he going to do? The infrastructure of the country, which is what Franklin Delano Roosevelt used to bring this country back, the jobs and everything, are gone. The equipment is gone. They shipped out all the equipment for manufacturing to foreign nations. It's sitting on foreign shores. So what's the Democrat going to do? How is he going to create jobs when the manufacturing equipment is not even here? You know,
I think what you do is you slowly bring it back. You need a Democratic Congress, but you do things like you no longer give tax incentives for people to leave this country. You do tax penalties for people that take jobs outside of America. You reward those that stay. You support unions. You know all that. I mean, health care.
You put tariffs in place and stuff like that. But still, with this, do you think this Congress is going to go for it when their hands are in the pockets of the corporation?
Which Congress? The Democratic Congress?
The current Congress.
You know, I don't think, despite the things that Ralph Nader and others say, I don't think the Democrats are as much in the pocket of corporations as you might think. There are individuals, yes. Do they get donations? Yes. Do they follow through on it? Yes. But as a party, you will see a lot more support for corporate regulation, a lot more support for ending high CEO salaries. I mean, you don't have to convince me about the individuals. We can start with Senator Jay Rockefeller of West Virginia and all the money he gets from telecommunications companies, and obviously he's not the only one.
I don't even have to go that far to name individuals. That's all I have to say is in the last 10 years, name one piece of legislation that was actually passed to help the common person.
Okay, but, you know, to be fair, Lottie, in 8 of those 10 years, we had Republicans in charge. 9 of them, in fact. We've only had Democrats in charge for 1 year, and we had a Republican president. So...
Okay.
I mean, I'm not justifying everything the Democrats have done in Congress, but it's very, very, it's impossible. Let's just say it. It's impossible to pass legislation unless you've got Senate, House, and the president. You can stop bad stuff from happening when you don't control everything, but you can't make good stuff happen. You just can't.
Well, I hate to say it, but actually they can't because they have enough Democrats in the House and in the Senate that they could stop the money and stop.
Well, no, you're right. They could stop. No. You're right. They could stop bad stuff from happening. They could have stopped the money from going to Iraq. That's true. And I've condemned them for it. Although, the thing is about Iraq is that the American people want a middle position. They don't want, even Obama and Clinton aren't saying, you know, if they were president, they would immediately bring every troop home as quickly as possible as if there were no money left, you know, no funds left, and therefore all go on the next ship as they shoot at us from behind. You need an orderly withdrawal, and they said it'll take, you know, about 16 months, something like that. The problem is that Congress has this blunt instrument. They can stop the funding, or they can do the funding. And because they're not the commander-in-chief and they can't control where the troops go, all they can do is stop the funding and force the hasty withdrawal. And I got to tell you what George Bush tells them in private, what his people tell him in private, this is from what I hear when I talk to them, is, you know, American troops will die. And it'll be the Democrats' fault. If the Democrats stop the funding, what George Bush is going to do is he's going to basically not give them body armor, not give them and just make them cut and run, if you will, but do so like leaving their posts in the middle of, you know, just running, literally running, retreating, surrendering, doing whatever he can to make Americans suffer. Really, I mean, it's almost like if you disobey me, Democrats, I'm going to be like a suicide bomber, it seems Bush is saying. I'll make America suffer so badly. I'll make those troops in Iraq suffer so badly. And they may blame me, but they'll blame you as well, and we'll all go down fighting. I mean, Bush is a suicide bomber on Iraq. He says if you cut off funding, what's that?
There's an answer to that. And there's a very easy answer to that. What you do is you don't give them a complete stoppage of the funds. You give them a limited amount of funds. And on the limited amount of funds, you let them know that this is it. This is all you got. And after this runs out, goodbye. And you can do what you want, and whatever you do, we're going to publicize it all over the place. The American people will know what you do. And that's how you handle it. It's the only way to handle it. It has to come to showdown.
The question is whether the American people would get it. And listen, there are many Democrats that support that. That's certainly something that I support. You certainly will find Russ Feingold and others leading that. I mean, obviously, Obama and Clinton both voted against further funding, but you could do that. You could say the Democrats give him $50 billion or whatever and say, look, you can use this money only to withdraw troops from Iraq. That bill actually passed the House.
Right.
In fact, one time it passed the Senate and the president vetoed it. But the thing is, if you put limitations on it, it's a weird thing the way legislation works, but if you put limitations on it, the president has to sign the bill, you see. So they did that. I don't know if you remember. One of the earliest votes they did was they did a vote to provide a limited amount of funds. I think it was about $50 billion with the proviso that it be used to withdraw the troops. And Bush vetoed it and
right.
said, okay, now I have
but
no money. Give me what I want.
They right back.
Well, they did try to do it right back. And by then, the Republicans were filibustering in the Senate. It passed the House several times, this bill. It passed the Senate once. It passed the House 3 or 4 or 5 times. In fact, most recently, Harry Reid brought it up in the Senate at Feingold's insistence, with everyone expecting it to be filibustered, and the Republicans, surprise, surprise, didn't filibuster just once because they knew that it didn't have the support that it used to have, and the thing lost, a majority vote because you've got most Democrats on the right side, and then you've got a number of Democrats that are scared, and frankly, with Lieberman, the Republicans have at least 50 on the vote on Iraq anyway, and they've got a number of Democrats, too. It's a blunt instrument. Now, I'm really, please understand, I'm frustrated like you. I think they should stop. I think they should stop the funding just to make a point, to play tough with the president. That's how I fight. But I just want to, in explaining what they're doing, I don't want you to think I'm justifying it. But I do understand where they're coming from. I guess that's all I've got to say on that.
Well, I am flustered on this. And I'm at the point of where I think maybe we don't deserve the democracy that we have. I think we've lost it as a people. I listened to Tom Hartman last week, and there was mention of a 67% approval rating for McCain. After everything we've been through.
Well, that's my point. No one's talking about McCain. We have all this Clinton-Obama fighting, and no one's mentioning that McCain is plagiarizing people, that he's copying speeches right and left.
Where are these nuts? I mean, that's what
I'm sorry?
I'm saying, where is that 67% of these nuts that are still looking to vote for McCain after everything we've been through?
Maybe you don't know them. I know a few of them.
Oh,
I don't know. Should I call you Lottie? What's your name, if I may use it?
Bob.
I can call you Lottie if you want.
Sure. Bob.
Okay,
Bob,
I'll just call you Lottie. Where are you from? Sounds like you're from Massachusetts.
I am.
Okay. Massachusetts, I would suspect that the people where you are the, those are the strongest Democrats in the country. Do you not know McCain supporters? Because I know some of them.
Actually, I hate to say this, but I got a funny feeling Massachusetts is going to go close with McCain. It's going to be a close one. It really
wow.
is. Because I know a lot of Democrats in Massachusetts that are voting for McCain.
Tell me why.
Pardon?
Why?
Why? Because for some reason or other, they see McCain as a moderate.
Because the media portrays him that way.
Yeah.
And because...
He's a war hero.
He is a war hero. So is John Kerry, but that didn't stop the Republicans from swift voting him. I mean, if you want to compare war hero to war hero, I mean, John Kerry, I don't remember how many silver stars and bronze crosses and things that he had. He had purple hearts. We had a war hero. So what?
I thought Kerry swift vote, though, because he was from Massachusetts.
Did people vote for John Kerry because he was a war hero? I don't think so. You almost never heard that he's a war hero. Yet they bring it up with John McCain all the time, and I'm not knocking the fact that he was a war hero. He was. Good for him. I'm glad about it. I'm also not, but that doesn't mean I want him to keep our troops in Iraq for 100 years and spend another $3 trillion that we don't have. I mean, to me, it's about policy. Look at we have the worst economic times since Bill Clinton was president, when we had good economic times. And since the last Bush recession, it's funny. Every time there's a Bush, there's a recession. There was a recession with Bush Sr. There was the first George W. Bush recession, now the second George W. Bush recession. And McCain has no plan for the economy. He's got nothing. He's got no ideas. He's like, give money, more money to the rich people. That's it. But people don't talk about that because we're busy fighting over Obama's preacher and Clinton's sniper attack in Bosnia.
Right. I mean, and that's what it's turned into. It's turned into a family squabble among the Democrats, and of course, the Republicans are going to be on top.
Well, and they're very gleeful about it. The other thing that gets me is all this money that we're spending fighting each other, and we're raising more than twice as much as McCain, and then all the money goes into helping, Clinton versus Obama.
Yeah, but it's borrowed money. It doesn't have any value. That the whole thing about borrowing money is you don't value it as much as if it was your own hard-earned money.
I'm talking about the money in the campaigns.
Oh, okay. I'm talking about the money we're spending with the war and everything.
Yeah. No, I mean, I hear what you're saying there. I just mean the money in the campaigns. And the thing is this. This could be turned to a positive thing, all right? There is some good stuff here. I don't want to be all cloud and no silver lining. We have more Democrats registering than any time in American history. And there's a reason for it. Obviously, independents want to have a choice. And so they're voting in the election where they can choose, rather than the election where they can't choose. In Pennsylvania, you have to be a Democrat to vote in the Democratic primary. So independents and Republicans who want to vote in the Democratic primary want to have some choice, even if it's a lesser, even if they're going to vote for John McCain and they want a lesser of two evils for the Democrats, they're registering. So I understand that some of this is false. It's not real Democrats. But still, there are some advantages. You have Clinton and Obama going to virtually every state in the United States. As I said, the exception is Michigan and Florida, which we can get to. But there's a West Virginia primary next week. Not next week, next month. And I remember Bob Kincaid complaining months ago, well, you know, West Virginia will be ignored. And it won't be. It actually will matter. Pennsylvania thought they would be ignored. It will matter. The whole irony of the Michigan and Florida thing is the two states that wanted to be assured that they would not be ignored, and so they moved their primary all the way to the front, they're the ones who are most likely to be ignored. It's kind of a beautiful irony there.
Isn't it funny they were also the two states that ended up costing us in the last election? No,
well,
actually,
right.
It was Ohio.
Well,
Ohio.
Actually, Michigan was pretty solid for us.
Yeah, Michigan was solid. It was Ohio and Florida.
It was Ohio and Florida. And here's the thing. With this election, we can make the Obama-Clinton race a positive. If the two of them would only speak positively about themselves and not go negative, and that's virtually impossible in politics, but I really, really wish they'd try, then they could use all this money that's being brought in. And again, each candidate, Obama and Clinton, have raised far more than John McCain. They can use this money to promote them, and not just them, to promote Democratic Party values. Look, they mostly agree on health care. They mostly agree on education. They mostly agree on Iraq. So instead of spending ads about how great Hillary Clinton or Obama is, how about spending ads on why we need universal health care, on why the war in Iraq is costing our economy so much? And then at the end, say, when you're done, you know, vote for Obama, vote for Clinton. That's fine. Use it in your political way. But that's the kind of thing that would not just help them against each other, but would actually help the Democratic nominee in the fall. Is that too much to ask? Then they can use all this money they're raising, all this new excitement, all the speeches, the fact that they've got people in every state. I mean, you know, John McCain, he doesn't have anybody in Pennsylvania. He doesn't need anybody in Pennsylvania. That race is decided. Use this on-the-ground grassroots support to build up something for the fall. Instead, all I hear is sniping. And I'm mad at it on both sides. As I said, I don't care whether you're an Obama or a Clinton supporter. Stop sniping.
I haven't decided yet. I can't decide yet.
Well, your state already passed, right? I mean, Massachusetts already voted.
Massachusetts already voted, but as far as me, when I vote next election, I personally haven't decided yet.
Wait, you haven't decided between the Democratic nominee and McCain?
Well,
you're going to vote for the Democratic nominee.
I haven't decided yet if who's my favorite candidate between Obama and Hillary.
Okay.
I mean, Massachusetts already decided, so I have no say in that anymore. But as far as personally, I myself haven't decided which is the better of the two.
Well, Lottie, I'll tell you, I went back and forth. Early on last year, I remember, on to about September, I was leaning toward Obama. Then from September to December, I was definitely strongly leaning toward Hillary Clinton. Then I talked at length with some Obama supporters and some people who said I would vote. I met more people who said that it's Obama or McCain to me than I met people who said it's Clinton or McCain to me. And so that helped make my decision to go for Obama. Plus, I saw what the press was doing. The press was giving Obama a free ride. And the sad thing is that oftentimes you can't fight the mainstream media. They were attacking Clinton. One thing Saturday Night Live got right is that they were tearing apart Hillary Clinton limb from limb. Mitt Romney, too, by the way. It wasn't just a Democratic thing. They were tearing apart Hillary Clinton and Mitt Romney, and they were praising Obama and McCain to the hilt. And that's why everyone thinks McCain is a moderate. McCain is a moderate compared to George W. Bush, the most radical right-wing extremist president we've ever had.
Moderate compared to Bush.
Ronald Reagan was moderate compared to Bush. Nixon is liberal compared to McCain. I mean, Richard Nixon, if he ran today, would be tarred and feathered as a liberal. The Environmental Protection Agency, the idea of giving tax cuts to the poor, actually tax rebates, negative taxation, the idea of opening to communist China. I mean, Nixon was a conservative, but by today's standards. What's that?
That was back when the Republican Party had values, some of them.
Yeah, well,
I mean,
that's
since then it's changed.
Partly it's the religious right. It's back before, and that was really something that Ronald Reagan did, before the religious right took over the Republican Party. There was a time when evangelical Christians really just sort of stayed out of the process.
Yep.
And they've taken over the Republican Party. I mean, there's a reason why John McCain, who did one time call Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell agents of intolerance, warmed up to them, gave a speech at Falwell's University, and made niceties, and even took back that statement when he was asked by Tim Russert. He specifically said, no, I don't consider them agents of intolerance. And this is after Falwell and Robertson said that September 11th was caused by abortionists, feminists, pagans, and homosexuals. Now, whatever you think about Pastor Jeremiah Wright, he has at least a decent argument that our foreign policy led to blowback, led to 9/11. I mean, I don't like the language he used, but at least there's an argument there that makes some sense. But
yes.
Tell me how feminists caused 9/11, please.
Oh, they did.
Or abortionists,
but
or gay people,
Pastor Wright,
or pagans.
I want to say something about Pastor Wright and his language.
Yeah.
He used rough language. He used language which incited people. You know something? The incidences he talked about, they damn well should incite people. They really should. And then the language he used isn't near what he should have used.
You know, I'd like to read for you some language from Martin Luther King in a speech he gave.
He used the same language.
Condemning the war in Vietnam. Well, not quite as bad, but here's the quote. This is the famous speech by Martin Luther King condemning the war in Vietnam. He said, quote, "Don't let anybody make you think God chose America as his divine messianic force to be a sort of policeman of the whole world. God has a way of standing before the nations with justice, and it seems I can hear God saying to America, you are too arrogant." Now, actually, the written portion of the speech goes farther, although I've listened to the audio version. He doesn't say this in the audio version. Martin Luther King, unlike Jeremiah Wright, knew when to cut back a little. The written speech of Martin Luther King goes further, and he says, God says to America, I can hear God saying to America, you are too arrogant, and if you don't change your ways, I will rise up and break the backbone of your power, and I will place it in the hands of a nation that doesn't even know my name. Be still and know that I'm God. Men will beat their swords into plowshafts, their spears into pruning hooks. Nations shall not rise up against nations, neither shall they study war anymore. Now, that's actually his written speech. I've heard the oral speech. He stops at arrogant. I think Martin Luther King knew when to stop. Here's, I think, the difference. And I do think Jeremiah Wright went too far. You may disagree, but there's a difference between talking about all of the harm America has done, which I think is something that has to be done. There's a difference between talking about blowback, which I think has to be done, and to say that America's essence is its white racism and its horrible military-like foreign policy. There's a difference between saying America has done all these awful, awful things and saying that, in effect, that is all we are. And when you say, goddamn America, then you're, in effect, saying we are only that is the worst of us. And I think that's obviously wrong, and I think that's too far.
No, I don't, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Words don't kill. Words can hurt a bit, but they don't kill. 9/11 kills. All right, planes into buildings kills. Bombs in buildings kills. Words don't. And the words are a warning. And that's what you got to take them as.
Well, words do kill. I'm not going to say words don't kill. I mean, you can rally up a crowd to kill. I mean, I don't have to name all the demigods in history let me give you the worst of Wright's words, because I know you won't defend this, Lottie. I'd be shocked if you do. The worst that Wright said, in my view, was when he said that AIDS was a conspiracy by the government to kill black people.
All right, that's a little bit
unfair. The worst that can kill, because you're taking a group of people that are already down and out, already persecuted, already suffering, and you're teaching them that the government is in a conspiracy to get them. And what does that lead them to do? It leads them not to seek health care. It leads them to not believe that they can have any success here. Which is
I agree with you there, but then I look back at what the government has done, and I don't want to condone those words, because I mean we're in the know. We know a little bit more than he does about what's been going on with it, because we now can look back on it.
Jeremiah Wright, I think, knows the truth. Maybe some of his flock doesn't. I think Wright knows. I think Wright knows the difference between Tuskegee and AIDS. I think he does.
Well,
Tuskegee happened, AIDS didn't.
You got to look at when he gave that speech. Was that given at the height of the AIDS epidemic?
No, I don't think so, but that's a great question. My impression, my best recollection is it was given in 93, which is well after the height of the AIDS epidemic.
Was still where people were still iffy about AIDS. that they,
well, people were still dying in 93, but AIDS
right.
came on the
and
scene in 84.
And there was a lot of going around.
Well, they do go around. I just think it's irresponsible. Look, all I'm saying is I think Obama hit the note right in exactly his language of condemnation and praise. By the way, I found the quote on Israel, which I wanted to give out. Obama said, because I very much appreciated that. I had it, and then I lost it. Yikes. Where was it? There it is. He was talking in his speech on race. And he says, the remarks that have caused this recent firestorm weren't simply controversial. They weren't simply a religious leader's effort to speak out against perceived injustice. Instead, they expressed a profoundly distorted view of this country, a view that sees white racism as endemic and that elevates what is wrong with America above all that we know that is right with America, a view that sees the conflicts in the Middle East as rooted primarily in the actions of stalwart allies like Israel, instead of emanating from the perverse and hateful ideologies of radical Islam. As such, Reverend Wright's comments were not only wrong but divisive at a time when we need unity, racially charged at a time when we need to come together to solve a set of monumental problems. And he goes on and on. To me, Obama hit it right on the head. I mean, I just like the way he... I just agree completely with Obama. I don't agree completely with Wright. I just think he... I mean, what do you think, Lottie?
I agree. He hit it right on the head. I mean, Wright seems to be a little bit more theatrical.
Well, of course, that's his job. He's a preacher. His job is to
give him a little bit of leeway.
Well, I do, and that's why.
Saturday
listen, I see a huge difference between Wright
and Comedy Show. Right, and they say stuff that would turn people's heads if you said it with a straight face.
You know what's funny? The most famous comment of Wright seems to be "those chickens coming home to roost," which is a quote from Malcolm X. That quote, actually, if you read the entire context of the speech, which virtually no one I know has, but if you go to YouTube, you can find the full 10 minutes surrounding that quote. He's actually quoting someone else. He's quoting an ambassador, a white ambassador, whose last name was Peck, who was saying this. He was literally quoting someone else's. Now, I'm sure he believed it, but he was quoting someone else's words. And I just think it's funny that that's never reported. But Jeremiah Wright, look, I support Obama. I hope he's the nominee. I think he's a stronger candidate than Hillary Clinton. But I guarantee you, we are going to be talking, like it or not, and I don't like it, about Jeremiah Wright up until November of this year.
Oh, hell yeah.
No question about it.
Hey, remember the blue dress?
Right.
Of course.
Even the Swift boat.
Just like that. Sorry? Yeah.
Even the Swift boat.
Blue dress, it's going to be just like that. I mean, the press is going to rub our face in it.
I'll tell you something, and I want to thank you for your call, Lottie. I do want to mention that I see ELO in the chat room says that Obama isn't four square on the corner of allowing gay people to marry. One thing you should know that I don't know that a lot of people do know is that despite the fact that Reverend Wright is, in my view, excessive, we'll just say that, and he's virulently anti-Israel, and he's got some other things that I disagree with, he's actually, Reverend Wright is pretty good on gay rights. And on the scale of black preachers, he's amazing, because a lot of African-American preachers do not support gay rights. They have commitment ceremonies in Obama's church. I think Obama is being a politician here, Elo. I just got to tell you that. Because he doesn't think that America's ready. I think Obama and Clinton and John Edwards and all of them, I think Biden, Dodd, you name it, Richardson, all of them would believe in the right of gay people to get married, and they just don't think the American public is ready. And one way you know this is look at Al Gore. Here Al Gore is not running for office, and so very, very quietly, and I'm glad he said it, but it was, oh my God, was it quiet. It made no news. On his own website, Al Gore announced a few months ago that he supports the right of gay people to marry, and virtually no one noticed it. And I think, again, Al Gore supported it all along. They just don't think the American people are ready for that yet. So I guess I understand it. It doesn't even bother me that much. Maybe it should, but I'm more bothered at the American people and the perception that the American people aren't ready than I am at the politicians for bowing into that perception.
Well, in a way, they have to. They have to show a little bit of conservatism, because I think we are a little bit on the conservative side. this country.
Yeah, the other thing that Obama did that pleased me is on Martin Luther King Day before his church, he specifically condemned anti-Semitism and homophobia, specifically mentioned homophobia in an African-American church in Atlanta. And I just think he's I'm not worried. I'm not worried about him or Clinton on gay rights. I'm not. I mean, Bill Clinton, for example, as much as I hate Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and as much as I wish he'd stuck to his guns, I just feel that Bill Clinton wanted to do the right thing. He tried to do the right thing. He tried to end the ban, and he was forced by largely conservative Democrats, people like Sam Nunn, who I detest, to back down.
How much choice did Clinton really have in that?
Yeah, I mean, I wish he'd stood firm. It would have been interesting. You know, Truman stood firm. Harry S. Truman was challenged when he desegregated the nation's military in the 1950s. And he said, no, I think it was 1948. I actually think it was earlier than the 50s. And he desegregated the military. And a number of people made the exact same argument. They said white Southerners, meaning white Southern racists, white Southerners, they said, won't serve with black people. They'd sooner not serve and will lose vast numbers of white Southerners. Basically, people were saying that all the white Southerners in the military, or the great, great majority of them, were racist. And lo and behold, very few left. I think that racism, you know, it's racism is there. Homophobia is there. But when you are forced to work with someone that's different from you, people learn to get along. I actually think there's probably less racism in the military today than in ordinary society. I may be wrong. If someone disagrees, they can let me know. But I think when you're forced to work neck and neck with someone of a different race, religion, sexual orientation, whatever, you learn people are people. They're jerks of all kinds.
It's just like any other fear. Once you confront the fear, you see that it's nothing that goes away.
It's true. Lottie, I got to go real soon, but just tell me this before you leave. What's your view on what should happen in Michigan and Florida?
My first impressions were to leave it as is because they broke the rules. All right, but I can't be hard-nosed about it. I think what they should do is have the election. Let the people have their say.
Who should pay for it?
Ah, good question. The state should pay for it, technically.
I think so, too. Hey, thanks for your call, Lottie. I appreciate it.
It was wonderful. Thanks, Mark.
And listen, it just shows you that when I have time, I have no guests, call in. We can have long conversations on the air. I like it. Lottie, that was a terrific call, and I really do appreciate it. I think they do need to do a revote in Michigan and in Florida, and I also think the state should pay for it. Look, in both states knew what they were doing. At the time they passed the legislation, they knew it was against the Democratic National Committee's rules. They thought that the Democratic National Committee would back down, and they didn't. And now for the states to cry, oh, no, we already had a primary. The taxpayers shouldn't have to pay for it. It's your fault. Accept responsibility for what you've done, Michigan and Florida. Please, we have to count these states. You can blame the politicians all you want. I do blame the politicians, but it's not the fault of the ordinary people of Michigan and Florida. Can you imagine? Can you imagine that we have 48 states, Puerto Rico, Guam, and Americans abroad choosing our next president, but not Michigan and Florida? I don't know what planet the Democrats are on, but I'll tell you this. The problem isn't Howard Deem. The problem is Obama and Clinton. They can't agree. Each one is gaming the system, trying to get ahead. And I'll blame my candidate first. I will tell you, I think on this particular issue, Obama's been worse than Clinton. Clinton's been worse than the negative attacks. I give her demerits for that. But on the issue of Michigan and Florida, Obama's been worse. He's been saying, well, we want to make sure that people can vote again, even if they voted in the Republican primary. Well, that's not fair. That's not the way it works. Obama, you need to allow a primary. If they raise private money, fine. If the state pays for it, fine. We've got to get Michigan and Florida to count, and they should do it on June 3rd, the last day of the primary season, so that finally the superdelegates can choose and we can go into the summer, into August, with a united Democratic Party and take on John McCain. And next week we'll be trying to get away from the Clinton-Obama battles and talking in detail about John McCain, not just the plagiarism, but all the ways he's flip-flopped and all the ways he would bankrupt the American economy. But for now, this is Mark Levine, signing off.